Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's podcast is about curcumin. Our guest, Dr. A.J. Goel, he's a researcher with almost too many credentials to recite. We talked about that in our introduction, part one. His latest book is Curcumin, Nature's Answer to Cancer and Other Chronic Diseases. In part one, we talked about curcumin's potential for preventing and treating cancer. And Dr. Goel, you know, it seems that one of the properties of curcumin is that it's a marvelous anti-inflammatory. And that may be the key to its applicability to so many other chronic diseases. And in your book, you talk about depression, Alzheimer's disease and dementia, arthritis and joint pain, even diabetes, obesity, and heart disease, and also digestive disorders. So in part two, maybe we can branch out a little bit from cancer and talk about some of these other conditions.
Absolutely. So I think you said it right. So one of the among many different activities curcumin has, one of the most important activities for curcumin is its ability to fight inflammation. So it's probably one of the most potent naturally occurring anti-inflammatory medicine I know of. So it's a phenomenal anti-inflammatory, and I think once you can control low levels of chronic inflammation, that basically is the reason, another reason why it works so beautifully in so many different diseases, because if you can control inflammation, if you can control oxidative stress, you have a much higher likelihood of controlling all so many different diseases, because the root cause for a lot of diseases is essentially increased inflammation and oxidative stress.
So a surprise to some might be that curcumin may be beneficial for depression. So how does that what's the mechanism by which curcumin can have an impact on mood?
And absolutely, I think that's very important too. I think when it comes to depression, people do not think that depression is one of those diseases which has a basis or underlying reasons for inflammation. But that's absolutely one of the most important things, that people who are chronically depressed, and it's been studied in many different experimental models, that people who are chronically depressed, there are two things which go wrong with them. One, when you are chronically depressed, there's a process, we call it neurogenesis, which essentially means formation of new brain cells. So the process of neurogenesis slows down in people who are depressed. So which is not a good thing, because if you're not forming new brain cells, you're not really producing corresponding neurotransmitters and other neuronal enzymes which we need for normal brain functioning. So these are the two things which go wrong with people with depression. Lack of formation of new brain cells, and also imbalance in their neurotransmitters. And there's lots of studies done in animals and even human data that when you take curcumin, actually it helps on both fronts. So when you take curcumin, it speeds up the process, it activates the process, it enhances the process of formation of new brain cells, which is good, because if you're forming new brain cells, you're going to have accompanied higher levels or better levels or the normal levels of your neurotransmitters, and that is very, very important. And once you start doing that, that you see the benefit of using curcumin.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
I'm sorry, we're beginning to look at depression is not just an emotional disorder or a psychological condition, but an inflammatory condition of the brain, that it may relate to systemic inflammation. We see certainly a higher incidence of depression in patients with inflammatory disorders like rheumatoid arthritis. And also there are many studies that suggest that other anti-inflammatory nutrients like omega-3 fatty acids have a beneficial effect on depression. So perhaps through the same mechanism of tamping down inflammation, these things work to, reduce the brain on fire.
I think you summarized it very well, and I think that's exactly the thing, that we do not think some of these diseases have inflammatory component to them, but we are recognizing now that is, inflammation is a big part of a lot of these diseases, and if we can control inflammation, we can derive therapeutic benefit from using curcumin. So back to the depression question we were talking. So we have a few years ago, we performed a study where we took patients who have major depression, and we gave them one group of patients, we gave them curcumin, only 1 gram a day, 500 milligram twice a day. And in the second arm, we gave them the standard of care, equivalent of Prozac. So it was a very short, 6 week long study, and at the end of the 6 weeks, we noticed that people who took curcumin actually did as well as those who took Prozac.
Wow.
So if I were to make a choice, I'm going to take a drug like Prozac, which basically is a SSRI, which I have to take for the rest of my life. And we know that when you take these drugs like Prozac, every few years, you're going to develop resistance, you're going to develop tolerance, you're going to continue to change the drug. So you are essentially dependent for the rest of your life on taking these drugs. And they have their own toxicity profile or side effects attached to them. In contrast, you can take curcumin, which works as beautifully, and it is not simply managing your symptoms, but like I said before, it enhances the process of formation of new brain cells and so forth. So when you take curcumin, it is not only restoring the levels of neurotransmitters, but also at the same time, it is healing you. It is really giving you the help you need, and you probably don't need to be dependent on for the rest of your life. But when you take a nutraceutical like curcumin, you're not taking it for one indication, although you may be taking it for depression, but it's going to help you on so many different levels in terms of preventing your risk for cancer and diabetes and arthritis and Parkinson's and so forth. So I think that's what makes curcumin so unique, that it is not disease-specific compound, but can help you on so many different levels.
So in addition, instead of side effects, there are side benefits. When we
Absolutely.
Come to, you know, we're talking to the brain, and of course, there's a lot of research that has been undertaken looking at curcumin's effect on slowing the progression of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Can you touch briefly on that research?
Yes. So there's a lot of data now. At least I'm aware of 5 to 6 different human clinical trials underway in the U.S., and I'm involved in a couple of other trials in Australia and other countries. So there's a lot of data now coming up that curcumin is helping patients with Alzheimer's and dementia both. If you look at historical data, you know, I give you example that curcumin, essentially a turmeric, comes from, mostly been used in India. And if you look at the incidence, overall incidence of Alzheimer's in India versus U.S., it is Alzheimer's almost non-existent in
Wow.
India.
Hmm.
So now I'm not trying to suggest that it is all because of curcumin, but people do eat turmeric-laden meals every single day, multiple times a day. But each meal also comprises of many other herbs and spices, so we don't really know for sure that all this protective effect from Alzheimer's and dementia in that population is entirely because of curcumin or turmeric, but it is possible that a lot of that protection does come from curcumin and turmeric. So there's quite a bit of data on this, that curcumin does help in patients with Alzheimer's and dementia, and there's some new studies which shows that curcumin can even cross your blood-brain barrier, so it can reach your brain, and it can help in terms of dissolving the beta amyloid plaques, which are one of the more important features in patients with Alzheimer's. So there's a lot of mechanistic data supporting all of this anecdotal and clinical evidence out there that curcumin is very, very effective in patients with Alzheimer's.
Let's move to joint pain. This is virtually a ubiquitous problem for most people over the age of 50, one form or another of arthritis. What's the evidence for curcumin versus joint pain?
Yeah, so joint pain, I think that's something most people in the audience can relate to rather easily, because when it comes to rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis, and a lot of these diseases, we know they have a strong, huge inflammatory component. Although rheumatoid arthritis is a autoimmune disease, but still it has a big inflammatory component to it. So like we discussed earlier, curcumin is very, very potent anti-inflammatory, and in these conditions where inflammation plays a big role, if one were to consume curcumin as a proactive preventative, or while you are on, you have some sort of arthritis, it is extremely potent. I mean, I have seen hundreds of these people sharing their stories that how wonderful it is that people who have been suffering for 10, 15, 20 years with arthritis-related pain, and once they start taking curcumin, within a few weeks and months, they can see the pain dissipate. In the similar context, we had done a few years ago, we did a first human clinical trial in patients with rheumatoid arthritis, which is, like I said, it's an autoimmune disease. We know there's an inflammatory component to it, but there was never no clinical evidence in terms of human studies. So we were the first ones to do a human trial in patients with rheumatoid arthritis, where again, we gave patients 500 milligram twice a day, a specific extract of curcumin called BCM95 curcumin, which is a high absorption curcumin. And in the other arm of the study, we gave patients their standard of care non-steroidals, such as ibuprofen.
Yeah.
Again, eight-week-long study, very short study, because it was just a proof-of-principle concept study to see whether curcumin would help these patients. And what we saw that after 8 weeks, patients measured on Hamilton rating scale, which is a clinical scale people use for measuring the impact of drugs in patients with rheumatoid arthritis. What we saw that curcumin actually did 2 to 4% better. So I'm not trying to make a big deal out of 2 to 4%, but it was almost equally as good as a non-steroidal, which is a big deal. Again, we know that non-steroidals are not good when you take them for long periods of time.
A lot of side effects.
You know, there are a lot of side effects. Anywhere between 60 to 20,000 people die of non-steroidal overuse each year in U.S. alone. So it is a very toxic drug. I mean, you can take these drugs for short periods of time, but when you're talking about rheumatoid arthritis, you are dependent on these drugs for the rest of your life. So I think those are the key points we're talking here, that any chronic illness, any illness for which you're going to take any kind of medication for the rest of your life, I do not know of a single medication which comes with a clean bill of health saying there's no side effects or no toxicity. There's no such thing. So when you're going to take these drugs for the rest of your life, you're going to see the toxicity after long-term use. And I think that's what makes curcumin so unique, because you can take it, and all these clinical studies I'm telling you on depression and arthritis, every single time when we compared head-to-head curcumin with their standard of care drugs, curcumin performed almost as good or slightly better than the pharmaceutical drugs. So which is very, very exciting, because what that tells us that these compounds are almost functioning like pharmaceutical drugs, but without all the side effects, but all the additional benefits which you referred earlier. So these are safe, inexpensive, and very, very effective drugs in a lot of other diseases which we don't think of on a daily basis.
And of course, most important is a condition that leads to the number one cause of death, which is heart disease, cardiovascular disease, cardiometabolic syndrome. This is a huge problem. People get fat, they get inflamed, they develop prediabetes or diabetes with its associated risk for atherosclerosis, heart attack, and stroke. So how can curcumin play a role in preventing that?
Yes, so again, compared to cancer and other diseases, there's not that much science out there, but there are many, many studies done on curcumin in these conditions, where curcumin has been shown that because of its anti-inflammatory effect, it makes it very, very potent in terms of reducing, you know, it's raising your HDL levels, which is a good cholesterol. So there's a lot of studies that when you take curcumin for some period of time, you can increase your HDL levels, and which will help move the fats out of the artery. So which means you can unclog your artery, so you don't have to worry about atherosclerosis, and it reduces, which essentially means reducing the stickiness of the blood cells in your artery. So your blood can flow better, so you have cleaner arteries, and you have high levels of HDL. Also, there's a lot of data shown that curcumin reduces the inflammatory markers such as C-reactive protein and homocysteine, and reduces the risk of heart disease. Also, there are studies which have shown that it reverses the congestive heart failure and reduces the risk of stroke and brain damage from patients who have cardiac stroke. So there are many, many studies done on how curcumin use can help improve overall health of your heart.
And finally, last but not least, and perhaps there are other applications, I use a lot of curcumin for patients who have inflammatory bowel disease. I seem to get to see a lot of those folks because we work with a nutritional approach, and we use various supplements and other methods to get those patients off of drugs. What role does curcumin play in IBD, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease?
Yes. So in terms of IBD, I think that's much easier to comprehend because we've talked about it, that it's a very potent anti-inflammatory, and one of the key risk factors for patients with IBD, whether we're talking about ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, is high levels of inflammation in their gut, in their colon. And since it's a very potent anti-inflammatory and it is poorly absorbed, it stays in the colon longer, which basically mitigates your risk for colitis and colon cancer and all of that. So there was actually a recent human trial done on patients with IBD, patients especially with ulcerative colitis. So these patients with ulcerative colitis are typically put on drugs such as mesalamine or 5-aminosalicylic acid. So that's the standard of care for mild to moderate IBD. So patients who become refractory to mesalamine or mesalazine. So this was a human clinical trial done on patients who had mild to moderate ulcerative colitis, and these patients have become completely refractory. They're not responding to these drugs. When these patients were given curcumin, only for 3 months, they had complete clinical remission from colitis. Complete clinical remission just by taking curcumin, and these patients are not responding to the pharmaceutical drugs at all. There are a few other studies published previously, about 6 to 8 years ago, where curcumin was given to patients who have, you know, a disease called familial adenomatous polyposis, or where people make a lot of polyps in their colon. And in that trial also, when curcumin was given, people saw there were fewer polyps in their colons and so forth. So, and there are new studies, which I'm involved in as well, on patients who have Crohn's disease and colitis. There are at least 6 different studies currently being done in different parts of the world on patients with colitis and Crohn's, and there are tremendous results in terms of curcumin's ability to help these patients. And I think a big part of that is its ability to control inflammation.
Great stuff. So are there any cautions about curcumin use? Because, for example, patients who are about to undergo a surgery are sometimes told to get off all supplements, or sometimes patients are on blood thinners and they're told not to take herbal supplements. Or perhaps in pregnancy, it may be a time where, you know, you step back and you don't use strong herbal preparations.
Right. So I think among the 3 things you just mentioned, whether we can take it, whether patients should be careful taking certain kinds of drugs, I think the most important thing among all of this is, I think if somebody is using drugs, blood thinners, you know, such as warfarin, Coumadin, and so forth. So if you're taking drugs which can thin your blood, I think in those cases, I think you have to be very, very cautious. I mean, I wouldn't worry too much, but one should be very cautious. You should consult with your doctor. Mm-hmm. You should consult with your physician before you continue taking or consider taking curcumin, because if you're already on blood thinners, it can possibly exaggerate those effects. On its own, a lot of people ask me this, that on its own, if I'm taking curcumin, should I worry about getting my blood thinned, or does it have enough blood thinning activity? The answer is really there's no clinical evidence for that. Mm-hmm. But when you're on drugs which are already blood thinners, one should be very, very careful. Mm-hmm. In terms of pregnancy, really, there's no concern. And the reason I say that is, first, it's very hard to do clinical studies like this to see if it'll, because no ethical boards are going to allow it. But mm-hmm. I give you a real life example. People in India, you know, there's a population of 1.3 billion people, a lot of women there who are conceiving children every single day, right? Mm-hmm. And these people, and these women are still continuing
they're eating curry.
So really, there's no concern about pregnant women taking it. But again, it boils down to, I think we need to be careful, and I should have said it up front. Anytime you're going to consider taking any new supplement, whether it's curcumin or anything else, and especially if you're taking it in a condition where you're already trying to use it for therapeutic purposes, please, please, please do consult your physician before you do anything, because every patient is unique, every individual is unique, every circumstance is unique. So although I said for the most part curcumin is extremely safe, it is non-toxic and so forth, but every situation is very unique to every individual, so one should always consider talking to the doctor before they embark upon any of these new treatments or supplements.
And I'll add a little asterisk to that, because unfortunately, as you well know, many physicians are not well-versed in the potential for supplements to be either beneficial or harmful. They're just not up on it, and they tend to be dismissive of supplements. So talk to someone who's at least up on the latest science related to curcumin and nutraceuticals.
I think that's a very, very important point, and I think that's one of the important things I covered in my book towards the end. I wrote a chapter especially on this context. As said, this chapter is written only for the practicing physicians, and I strongly encourage a lot of people who call me. I said in that chapter I sort of summarized all the clinical and scientific evidence for curcumin being very safe and how it can be used in so many different diseases. And my own experience has been that a lot of people who reach out to me saying, can you share with me some sort of scientific evidence about curcumin which I can take it to my doctor to show that this is real? And I can tell you that 8 or 9 out of 10 times when patients take enough scientific, you know, articles or a summarized article or something which is reasonably peer-reviewed publication, I think most times physicians would take it seriously and they would be accepting of that evidence, and they would allow their patients to start taking or continuing beyond curcumin. So I think it's a educational process, because a lot of the physicians are not up to speed with some of the literature on nutraceuticals, and that's where their hesitance or reluctance comes in. But once they see enough evidence out there, there are more than 9,000 studies published, scientific studies published on curcumin. So I do not think any physician, if they were able to see all that scientific evidence, would still be dismissive or skeptical of benefits of curcumin.
Well, I'm curious. You're on the faculty of Baylor University Medical School. Are you invited to interact with students, speak to students? Do you perform grand rounds there where physicians sit in and take notes on your latest findings? Or what's
absolutely
the...
No. I frequently speak at my own institution, I share my research with my colleagues and my faculty and students and everything. And just to sum it up, over the last few years, based on some of the work we have done and some of the work we have published on curcumin and so forth, so right now in this hospital, at the Baylor Hospital in Dallas, we are currently doing multiple trials, multiple human clinical trials using curcumin. So right now we have two active human clinical trials, one on patients with colon cancer and another one with women with cervical cancers. So at our own institution, so we believe in it, so we are doing these clinical studies on curcumin, and we have a couple other trials currently underway. So absolutely, over the years, I've been able to share all the work that I've done, and I've been able to convince a lot of my oncology colleagues here, and I've shared all the research we have done and others have done to convince them that this is a very safe and possibly very effective nutraceutical which should be considered for use in cancer patients and many other diseases.
Well, that's great. I congratulate you on making inroads in literally the belly of the beast, because you work in a major cancer center, and it's great that you're having some influence there. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? First of all, we urge our listeners to get your book, Curcumin, Nature's Answer to Cancer and Other Chronic Diseases, available through the usual sources. Is there a website or a place where people can learn more about your work?
So I do have a website, my institutional website, and it shows some of the work we are doing. It shows all the peer-reviewed scientific publications we have made. But other than that, I do not have a dedicated website for all the research I'm doing on curcumin. But I think I would welcome any and everybody to look up my name and Baylor Research Institute, and it'll give you a glimpse of some of the stuff we are doing here. Some of the clinical trials we are doing, some of the research we are publishing, and for a more in-depth understanding on curcumin and some of the work I have done and others have done, I think this recent book I wrote is probably a good resource to use as a summarized version of where we are.
Okay, and for our listeners who want to pursue that, the exact spelling of Dr. Goel's name, first name is A-J, A-J-A-Y, last name Goel, G-O-E-L. And so Google that, find his institutional affiliation at Baylor, and you get an entree into some of the work that he's doing over there. But get the book. The book, very succinct, really lays out the case for applying curcumin to a wide variety of conditions. And congratulations on your work, and we hope to get you back again soon as you continue to pursue research and come up with new discoveries about curcumin.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it and look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure. Dr. A.J. Goel. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.